We're hitting the home stretch. I'm tempted to ask what was the best part, but I think I know the answer. Confirmed. Okay, so here's our topic this evening. Compassion beyond nirvana. And there, a group of something like 11 students came from Atlanta, Georgia to come here to Gitanagari for the first time. And I don't know if there's anybody in that group from Emory University, but most of them are from Georgia Tech. But at the first introductory talk for people that never heard anything about Krishna consciousness was a topic very similar to this, just beyond nirvana, the path of yoga. And I didn't know what to expect. But they advertised at the liberal arts section of campus, and so it was a good turnout, and completely new people. And lively discussion. So this is on the same theme. I'm going to need Bhagavad Gita. But for a devotee audience, and specific on our topic of compassion, because at least three people repeated to me, they understood this message that whatever Vaishnava compassion, that was our first topic on Friday evening, whatever compassion we may have, it's just a little spark, a fragment, a little speck of the unlimited compassion from the unlimited Supreme, all compassionate Krishna. So, the path of yoga is meant to take us to Krishna. And so, compassion that's beyond nirvana, that's Krishna's compassion, and the path of yoga takes us to Krishna. But the term nirvana that's used commonly in our world today is connected with Buddhism. And just quickly, because of my visits to China, I've had to learn more about Buddhism than I did before I went to China. Because most people, if you ask them, are you familiar with some kind of spiritual teaching? They'll say Buddhism. And then you scratch a little bit, they really don't know what it is. But what it is, or at least Gautama Buddha, there's different brands, as you can imagine, over centuries. Buddha teaches that the root cause of suffering is desire. And the way to get beyond suffering is to become free from desire. And the method of becoming free from desire, among other things, is meditation. Now, there are different brands. When I was in college, I did one of them, Zen. There was a student that said, I practiced Three Pillars of Zen by Philip Kaplow. He said, that's a really good book. So I spent some time living at the Zendo in Rochester, New York, and doing, you know, Zazen. So that particular practice is you sit in a little space, ideal, you know, Brahma Muhurta hours, early in the morning before the sun rises, and there's a blank wall. We had this like padded room, so it was kind of like soundproofed. And for 2 hours, college student sitting still for 2 hours. We heard somebody sit still for 20 minutes. 2 hours every morning, along with some other things that happened the rest of the day. And the project was making your mind empty. But, of course, the mind isn't empty because there's desires. And there's thoughts connected to those desires, and this is my subjective experience. It was like watching clouds, because I used to do this as a kid, watching clouds pass through the sky, and then there's a pussycat. Oh, now it's a lion. I feel fear. But it's not neither a pussycat nor a lion, and then it's gone. So here come the thoughts and desires connected to the thoughts, and you just don't interact with them. They come and they go. And they come and they go. And then it becomes, you're just the observer of the thoughts. You're not the thoughts. Because normally we identify with the thoughts. We think we're our mind. But this is a practice of detaching yourself from the thoughts and the desires connecting with the thoughts until you're just the observer. And the goal of that, that's the phrase, be in the moment, or be mindful, without the detail. And then what's the goal of that? The goal of that is to go beyond the moment. And what's beyond the moment? Nirvana. Because material existence is nothing but a series of moments. And what's on the other side of the moments is nirvana. Enlightenment. Or what's enlightenment? Nothing. Nothingness. Void. Shunyavad. Like our prana mantra, nirvishesha shunyavadi. So nirvana is associated with that. And this topic is beyond nirvana. Because yoga takes one beyond... So, just do one quick thing. The emphasis in any spiritual teaching, if it's a spiritual teaching, is spend time over here and less time over here and over here. The modes of passion and ignorance pull one down or rev one up, and you can't be in the moment unless your lifestyle is in the mode of goodness. So compassion and other things help you be in the moment. I could spend some more time, but I'll just keep moving. So, as we know, or most of us know, Buddha rejected the Vedas. Incarnation of Krishna rejected the Vedas. There was a purpose, multiple purposes. But people were misusing the Vedas, making a livelihood out of animal sacrifice, saying it's in the Vedas, and I'm a Brahmin, and we take the animals into the temple. Same thing happened during Christ's time. In the place of worship, they were sacrificing animals, and he revolted. Anyway, Buddha rejected the Vedas and said, follow me. Now stop be compassionate. Stop being harmful to animals and all forms of life. Live in the mode of goodness, in short, without... the eightfold path of Buddha. It's mode of goodness, mode of goodness, mode of goodness, so that you can be in the moment, so you can go beyond the moment and enter into nirvana. For the Vedas tells us what's on the other side of nirvana. That's the path of yoga. And there's a little section that with the college students, I didn't read it, but I think with this group, I'm going to read it. And just to illustrate how awesome are Srila Prabhupada's Bhaktivedanta purports. So, in chapter 6 of Bhagavad Gita, which is chapter 6? Dhyan yoga. It's meditation. Right? Meditation. So, Buddhists do meditation, and Bhagavad Gita recommends meditation. And the meditation here is meditation that leads to samadhi, or trance upon the Supreme Soul situated within the heart. And very kindly, Krishna describes what it's like. Chapter 6. We'll start with text 19. As a lamp in a windless place does not waver, so the transcendentalist whose mind is controlled remains always steady in his meditation on the transcendent self. That was missing in Zazen. But in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna doesn't disappear. He's there. So here's the verses that are referred to. This perfection, trance, samadhi, is characterized by one's ability to see the self by the pure mind and to relish and rejoice in the self, capital S, in that joyous state, one is situated in boundless transcendental happiness, realized through transcendental senses, established thus, one never departs from the truth, and upon gaining this, he thinks there's no greater gain. Being situated in such a position, one is never shaken, even in the midst of greatest difficulty. This indeed is actual freedom from all miseries arising from material contact. Material contact comes, we know from earlier Bhagavad Gita, rajoguna, passion, I want to enjoy, brings material contact, kamesha krodesha. So the ignorance and passion shown before, it subsides and fades, and it's not just goodness, it's shuddha, pure goodness, pure consciousness, pure mind. Seeing the self with a capital S. Boundless happiness. I'm going to summarize the first paragraph. Prabhupada makes reference to Patanjali. Those of you that are a little familiar with yoga system, Patanjali is the author of the Yoga Sutras. He's the authority for yoga, this dhyana yoga. There's acceptance of transcendental pleasure in the Patanjali system. But the monists do not accept this transcendental pleasure out of fear of jeopardizing the theory of oneness. So what's beyond nirvana or material cessation is something. And that something is self with a capital S, and happiness with a capital H, beyond nirvana, beyond the stage of neutrality. And then he quotes, so here's the verse from Patanjali, Yoga Sutras. Purushartha shunyanam gunanam prati prasava kaivalyam. Now here's swarupa pratishta va chitti shaktir iti. What does that mean? The chitti shakti, or spiritual potency, internal potency, is transcendental. Purushartha, what does Purushartha refer to? The four Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, religiosity, so that you can get economic benefit or gain, prosperity, so that you can enjoy sense gratification and ultimately moksha. That's those four. Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, liberation. Prabhupada. This quote, oneness with the Supreme, is called Kaivalyam by the monist, but according to Patanjali, this Kaivalyam is an internal or transcendental potency by which the living entity becomes aware of his constitutional position. The scriptural authority saying, Kaivalyam means in a position of recognizing your spiritual identity in relation to the Supreme Entity, by which the living entity becomes aware of his constitutional position, that we know it, we hear it over and over, as being a servant of Krishna. That's our constitution, eternally. In the words of Lord Chaitanya, so he refers to Shikshastakam the first, Cheto Darpana Marjanam, so that's cleansing the mind. Then Bhava Mahadavagni Nirvapanam, where the blazing fire, Mahadavagni, is extinguished. Prabhupada says, in the purport here, that's nirvana. If any one of us chants nicely, we can achieve nirvana. And then beyond nirvana, by the path of yoga. Even the Patanjali kind, even chapter 6 kind. The theory of nirvana, dash, also preliminary, corresponds with this principle. In the Bhagavatam, this is called Svarupena Vyavastati. You'll see that term in a moment. Svarupena. Svarupa. Rupa means form. Svarupa is your own form, or one's own form. Svarupena Vyavastati. Becoming, so here's Prabhupada's explanation. The real life of the living entity, quote unquote. What's liberation? This moksha? It's not just becoming one with the Supreme. It's beyond becoming one with the Supreme. It's beyond nirvana. What is it? It's the real life of the living entity. And that's the compassion that Krishna gives when he gives the path of yoga. Only some people want something else. They don't want Krishna. They want to become one with Krishna. And so they read it differently and they interpret it differently and they don't get the goal. They get nirvana, where it's cessation of material existence, quote unquote. Cessation of material existence. And it goes on some more. The path of yoga means to connect with Krishna, and you connect with Krishna, and you go beyond nirvana. You go into the realm of Krishna. Not just cessation. Prabhupada writes that this cessation of material existence is like banging your head against a wall, bang, 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 and you stop. Ah. Brahmananda. Little anecdote is, for many years I just was based in New York and didn't travel so much. And the temple is built on top of, well, the A train, or the A train runs underneath the street. So when the train comes through, the whole building shakes. When people come from California and stay in the building, they can't sleep at night because they think it's an earthquake. But it's just the A train come rumbling through. And when the A train comes rumbling through during the daytime and people leave their car alarms on, they go into their office, you know, the A train comes through, the car alarm goes off, and then you hear this cacophony of sound. And then another one. And it goes on until they come out for the lunch break and turn it off. And that's, Brahmananda. I have my realization even in New York. But it's just cessation of the disturbance caused by material existence, the duality of material existence. So what's beyond the cessation of the duality of material existence? It's our positive spiritual existence. That's what liberation really is. That's the topic. Canto 2, chapter 10. The first two verses say what the 10 topics of the Bhagavatam are. And one of the 10 is liberation. And then the explanation given is this one by Shukadev. Swarupena Vyavasati. What liberation is not just nirvana. It's beyond. This chit shakti, or spiritual potency that's filled with bliss. Bliss because of the relationship with the Supreme. And when you gaze in meditation on that which is filled with bliss and beyond the temporary, you don't want to leave there. It's even if your activities for the day carry on, your mind is still there. Especially if your mood is the mood of service. So you have practical activities to do in your life. If you're a student, or if you're a mother, or if you're a worker, or if you're a whatever you are, whatever your duties are, you do your duties, but mamanusmara yujyacha. Mind goes to the person who you're serving, because everything is from that person who you're serving. Everything. Everything. There isn't something that isn't from that origin source. That's yoga. Linking with that. And people don't know what that is. But Bhagavad Gita is disclosing it. And the path of yoga wants us to go there. Here's this term. Svarupena Vyavastati. The permanent situation of the form of a living entity. After he gives up the changeable, gross, and subtle material body. Of course, it can be realized even when you have one. Here's a nice illustration of Narada Muni describing his previous life to Vyas, and when it was this body became no longer serviceable, he gave up that body and immediately, at once, assumed his spiritual form. Svarupena Vyavastati. I've been speaking about this a lot, and I don't mind speaking about it again. Something that I heard Prabhupada say, not so many times, but enough times it perked my curiosity. The living entity, the jiva, is both conscious and consciousness. So I was pondering, what does that mean? Sounds cool. What does it mean? What is the intention of Prabhupada speaking like this? What is he wanting his followers, his students, to understand? Then I would hear it again, and then they would hear it again, and finally I came across a reference that explained it. And it's from Jiva Goswami, one of my special heroes in Krishna consciousness. And Jiva Goswami makes reference to a verse from the Vedas that says, just as a lamp is both luminous and it illuminates or sends light to objects in the room like pots and plates, it's a Vedic way of saying stuff, so similarly the soul is both conscious and consciousness. So we're conscious. The soul is conscious. And the consciousness of the soul spreads out through the body and even through the senses. So we can hear the sound of the fan over there, and we can see the light in the room and hear the peacocks making their sounds. And different senses, consciousness extending outward through the senses. So yoga is to link the soul with the Supreme Soul through the medium of consciousness. We direct purposefully, deliberately, devotionally our consciousness to the object, Krishna. That then with Krishna consciousness we can see all other objects properly. And if we don't direct consciousness to Krishna, we'll see improperly. We'll see as object for sense gratification and so many other mistaken ideas of what's what. But the proper understanding of what's what requires that Krishna consciousness. Isn't that nice? That's yoga. Yoga systems lead to that. And in that Krishna consciousness, one can not only see the Supreme who is situated within the heart of all living entities, one can also be conscious of the individual self. And moreover, Queen Kunti teaches us how we can have spiritual relationships. Of course, taking Bir Krishna Maharaj's course will help us in having proper communications and understandings amongst others. But the principle is this function of super soul is he's the witness. There is the super soul. So the Mundaka Upanishad teaches just like there's two birds seated in a tree, one is enjoying the fruits and the other is the witness. So that's super soul and the individual soul both within the same body. Another illustration of the same. One bird enjoying the fruit, one bird as the witness, and yoga is to turn our attention to that witness or to the supreme soul. And that requires spending a little less time with fruitive activity. Gradually directing those activities to Krishna, bhakti, devotion to Krishna. That's what yoga is. So, Queen Kunti's teaching is how to have spiritual relationships, soul-to-soul relationships. Prabhupada explains it this way. This relation of the soul to the soul can be established by the via medium of the relation with the super soul. So beyond self-realization is how we're all connected to Krishna. So here's a nice fellow, Chinese fellow, and he has a nice friend. And besides the similarity, they're both from China, they both have beards. And they're both a little older. But there's another similarity. They have a spirit soul. And there's individual spirit soul. And not just the body is different, but the individual soul is also different, although simply a spark of life. And another similarity is they both have a manifestation of the very same super soul situated within their heart. And so the path of yoga teaches us how to have spiritual relationships, soul-to-soul relationships, through the medium of super soul. But you can't have that with you're not Krishna conscious. And Krishna conscious isn't just like be part of an organization and wear tilak. But it's consciousness, directing consciousness to the Supreme. And our primary means of doing that is mantra meditation. Of course, one form of that is chanting on beads. Another form, of course, is the kirtan. It's been really nice kirtan. And Subal's kirtan was, I thought he was going to go flying in the air. That was far away. He was gets really enthusiastic, huh? Kids really like Subal's kirtan. I've heard that from many kids. And the mantra is universal, very simple, even a child can do. And because the object of the mantra is the personality of Godhead himself, it can take us directly to Krishna, beyond the material atmosphere and beyond cessation of the material atmosphere, beyond nirvana, directly into the spiritual realm. So that's the gift that the all-compassionate Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give us. And we're having this nice gathering here in Gitanagari once again to help us qualify ourselves to receive that gift. We have some brahminical work to do, some heart cleansing work to do, some compassionate work to do, some Krishna connecting to do. But the process is there. And the goal is a worthy goal. So little steps at a time. Some recommendation. Take some notes. I'm sure you've been, during the course of Veer Krishnamurti's class, some of you have read to me what your notes are. Apply things that you've heard and understood. Share them with others. I know some are planning to share with others. I don't even know who they're planning to share with. But it's a principle of education. If you write something down, it helps you remember it. If you explain it to somebody else, it helps you remember it. If you implement it in your life, it helps you more than remember it, it helps you realize it. So the whole purpose of what we're doing is not just information, it's heart transformation. So take some notes, make some plan of how and with whom and when in what ways you're going to take this with you and apply it and share it with others. And probably most of you, if not all of you, have his book, and you can go over the book again. And these recordings also is meant just to assist all of that work. Real strong attendance this year, and of course some people couldn't come for the whole thing. Some people came for a day and then went. But I think the topic was very significant, and that attracted many people who have never been here before to come and participate. So thank you all for joining. And let's see if there's any comments or questions. Yes. Where's the mic?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. So like you mentioned that living entity is both conscious and consciousness, and our consciousness extends everywhere, like we can hear outside, yes, outside, yes, sounds and everything. So I was trying to understand what is the difference between, like, when we are in a some troublesome situation, so taking our consciousness to Krishna, and what is the difference between thinking about Krishna and just taking our consciousness to Krishna? And
there's
what
no
is
no difference. There's a mood, perhaps, of difference. One may be like fear, and the other may be shelter, or, you know, want, just simply wanting to connect. So, but the mood might vary, but the principle isn't.
So, like thoughts are going to Krishna. So, is it not more in a just mental platform? Like how can I distinguish that my heart is?
The mental platform, we use that term kind of in a pejorative sense, like it's a no-no being on the mental platform. But mental platform is what the mind does. In a neutral sense, it's what the mind does. In bhakti, we bring the mind to Krishna. Manmana. And you can say, hey, that's the mental platform. It's engaging the mind in the proper activity.
Yes, very much. Yeah, thank you very much.
Hare Krishna. Wondering difference between trance and the meditative aspect, and trance and devotional service, if there's similarities and differences.
What's the difference between what are the two things?
Like trance in meditation.
Trance in meditation?
Yeah, or samadhi. In terms of like the yoga ladder or Ashtanga yoga, compared to trance in devotion, and if there's similarities to it, or is it? I heard that trance is like, or samadhi is like nishta platform. Is there?
Well, there's. You're familiar with Kapila Dev's teachings, somewhat. So, when we speak of Kapila Dev's teachings, immediately the word comes Sankhya. And at the end of that long chapter 26, Sankhya section, the concluding verses say, now that, making it simple, the categories of matter are over here, you belong to the category of spirit over here, fix the mind on the Supreme Spirit, and in the maturing stages engage in devotional service to the Supreme Spirit. Then he details. But so, Sankhya philosophy is not just philosophy, it leads to meditation, fixing the mind on the Supreme Soul. And that Satya Yuga, meditation on the Supreme Soul, leads to bhakti. All those chapters on devotional service. Although the process is meditation. In Satya Yuga, correct? It leads to bhakti. And bhakti is active. You engage the senses while the mind is absorbed in Krishna. It's the immature stage is the yoga that's not active, and the mature stage is the mind fixed on Krishna, mama nusmara yudhyata. You engage in your prescribed duties. And that's chapter 27. What does it look like? Can you describe what it looks like? Even for a householder. What does the life of a householder engaged in the mind fixed on Krishna look like? That's bhakti. Not just stop doing those duties, not karma sannyas, and just fix your mind, but fix your mind and engage in prescribed duties. That's where the karma palatyag thing comes in. You dedicate the fruits to Vishnu. And that's just the preliminary. The karma yoga dedicates the fruit to Krishna. Your whole existence is for Krishna. It leads to bhakti. When properly guided, that's where it leads to. So the other is, one is immature, the other is mature. The whole of the yoga ladder takes one to the topmost rung. And if one gets stuck on this rung, according to Bhakti Vinod, then one is identified at this stage, that stage, that stage. And therefore, a progressive soul should always be doing according to their position presently and continually aspiring to take the next step in the yoga ladder. Is it clear? Anything else? Everybody's tired. How many stayed up till the very end of the kirtan last night? It went late. Satya Star was up with them till 11:30 at night, appreciating and saying, can you make the commitment to come back again next year? And he didn't get a firm yes. But they had a good time too. So, I hope they'll come. Most likely they'll come. Any other? Yes, all the way in the back.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, you are telling that desires is the starting point. I mean, having desires is like a root cause for all sufferings. As we move deep and deep, sorry, I'm not that good at English. As we move deep and deep in the Krishna consciousness, we leave all desires behind, and I mean, we want to forget everything. But what if sometimes, like, as we are running away, as we are leaving everything, all desires behind, desires keep haunting you, and it control your mind sometimes, and some, so in that situation, how to control the mind and go deep and deep into Krishna consciousness?
Nice question. Let me give you a very contrasting picture to desire is the root of suffering. That's not what Vaishnavas say. Prabhupada says that's impersonalism. So if you're having a problem becoming an impersonalist, that's good. We don't want you to become an impersonalist. We don't want you to give up desire. Vaishnava teaching says the root cause of suffering is ignorance. And from ignorance comes ignorant desire. And from ignorant desire comes ignorant activity. And from ignorant activity comes suffering. So the root cause of suffering is ignorance. The solution is not just read a lot and get smart, because that's material. Rather, bhakti, it's very important, bhakti has the power within it to eradicate ignorance. You follow what I'm saying? Vasudeve bhagavati bhakti yoga prayojatah janayati ashu vairagyam jnanam cha yadahai tukam jnanam cha yadahai tukam. Devotional service unto Vasudeva, who is Krishna, the son of Vasudeva, within it is jnana and knowledge. That it's permanently eradicates ignorance, because the original ignorance, the mama from which all the babies are born, is ignoring Krishna. And from that one ignorance comes all the other ignorances. So the problem is not desire. The problem is ignorance. So now what should you do? Go back to your question. See the things that you feel are important to you and thus desires. How does this connect to Krishna's service? How does it connect to pleasing Krishna? And if it doesn't connect to pleasing Krishna, you let it go. You know the Bhagavad Gita example, the tortoise that pulls his limbs in? Here's some service. Haribo! And then here's not devotional service, so I don't engage. That's consciousness extending and the consciousness withdrawing. And the extending and withdrawing, anukulyasya sankalpa, pratikulyasya varjanam, things that are favorable for devotional service, haribo. Things that are unfavorable, so the valve of desire is knowledge as opposed to ignorance. That which is going to nourish or foster that which is pleasing to Krishna, you say yes to. And that which is blocking or opposed to devotion to Krishna, you say no, thank you. Based on a higher taste, exactly as it's said here, from Drishtvandavarta taste. When there's a higher taste, it's easy to say no to the lesser taste. And the higher taste is pleasing Krishna, love. What's higher than love? And there's all over the place, t-shirts and slogans and things, shopping bags. Green and love, they're really popular slogans these days. Marketing. But what is it? It's the beloved should be pleased. And that transcendental position of love, there's no greater happiness. Then it's easier to say no to something that's not pleasing to Krishna. The desire isn't the thing that needs to be controlled as much as it is ignorance. And bhakti eradicates the ignorance. How's that? You look happy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Prabhu.
One question up front and I think we're going to end. 7:30.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna Maharaj. I was wondering...
He's the controller of that guy over there.
So is senses a symptom of consciousness? Is like the senses, the five
it's
senses?
It's an instrument.
Okay. If someone was...
Not a symbol of, it's an instrument of.
An instrument. So if someone was mute, blind, and deaf... Would they be experiencing full consciousness?
Consciousness isn't connecting. If the instrument is broken, consciousness is there but isn't extending out.
So if someone was mute, would they be able to fully experience their consciousness? Would they be able to elevate?
Are you asking, can they become Krishna conscious?
Yeah.
Is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Now, because the instrument may be broken, but spiritual sound vibration acts on the soul. Mm. So, how long it will take and all of those kinds of things, I can't say. Mm. But, yeah.
So, why is it that some people have more memory in smell or in hearing like this? You know what I mean? Like some people have more sensitive noses.
Yeah,
and
sure.
They is that...
Why not?
So that's an
instrument
variety.
Life would be really boring without it.
Okay.
There's variegatedness here.
Okay.
You know, some people can sing really nicely.
Yeah.
And some people can't carry a tune for their life.
Mm-hmm.
And they usually sing the loudest.
Yeah.
And they usually sit right in the front.
But emotion is in the mind, right? Emotion, feeling is...
Yes.
...is the mind. It's,
yes.
So it's...
Yes.
It's not real.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
So emotion
well,
is different from senses.
It's not real in the sense that it's temporary. It's an energy, so it's real in the sense that something's going on. But it's temporary.
Mm-hmm.
Like now you see it, and now you don't.
Right.
So it's something going on, but it's temporary.
Mm-hmm.
In that sense of not, it's not real. It's illusory. Appears to be real. Bigger than life. It's beating me up. And I'm crying. And it's gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, versus like a smell, you always remember it. Once you smell it, and then you smell it again, you always... It's like always there, so
especially
it's...
Especially bad smells, right? I'm sorry, I'm just making a commentary as you're asking your question.
No, I'm just trying to understand how the consciousness extends out throughout our bodies. Because I know some people who are deaf. I have some friends whose mothers are deaf, and I just wonder if they can really experience...
On the soul platform, yes. Mm. The auditory platform, perhaps not.
Mm.
But it goes to the soul. That we should know.
Mm. Thank you.
Okay, we have another special treat this evening.